down to brass tacks.
Hi, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, welcome.
Yeah, good to hear. Yeah, I want to touch a few things, a few areas, mainly on the COVID line. But the lady before the break just now, she spoke very passionately, passionate terms about the COVID corona and ambitions, not adhering to the government's directives to wear the mask and that kind of stuff. And she's telling her opinion, and I'm not going to disagree with her that, you know, some people are not wearing the mask. But I asked myself, and I want to know, I was one of the first persons to advocate the use of the mask, even at the time when you were not so much for it, back down in March, or something down there. But I was saying that, you know, this thing with wanting people to wear masks on the outside in the open, you know, is okay, but it should be left to the individuals. It should be for them to decide if they want to wear it once you're in the open and not in a crowd, whether to wear that mask or not. Okay, I think we are pushing the panic button when we are trying to say that if you're in the open and whether or not you are in a crowd, you should wear. That's what some people are pushing, and I'm saying that is really pushing the panic button. I'm also saying that this is a response to the lady, that there was no evidence of any corona in Barbados before this incident we had 2 weeks ago. There was no evidence to show such. And I'm saying that if corona was in the atmosphere, if it was spreading by, we know, we understand it goes by droplets is the thing that tends to spread it. But if it was an atmospheric thing, then none of us going to get away from it here in Barbados, because, you know, we see the prevalence of it. But we haven't seen it. And I don't understand why we continue to try push the panic button in this aspect of rain mass is concerned. And
can I respond to that? You know,
you go ahead. I'm about to get a piece more. That's all right.
I think the issue here is the uncertainty and the unknown. I think that if you and I recognize that in all of this, we do not know who may be carrying this disease, because people are asymptomatic. Quite a large percentage of the people who tested in Barbados or tested positive in Barbados are asymptomatic. Therefore, okay, in those circumstances, what you do is that you exercise caution. And wearing the mask is part of that exercise of caution. Even if we were COVID-free, because there are so many other people out there with COVID who are coming into Barbados, you operate on the premise that notwithstanding the government's best efforts to keep COVID at bay, there is always the possibility that someone will get there. That's the rationale behind the mask, you know.
But we are talking about wearing your mask in the open, Mr. Ellis, in our wonderful atmosphere conditions that we have here in Barbados.
Well, I want to say to you that we are sometimes out in the open. And as man, you will know that you could be walking the street in the open, and somebody you know comes and starts talking to you. Right. They have no mask and you have none. If in those, you can encounter circumstances like those. Look, nothing scared me more than in the early days than one day going through Swan Street and then realizing, whoa, I really needed a mask down here, because the street is very narrow and it was full of people and everybody was talking. You know, that's out in the open, yeah? But
okay,
the proximity of people to each other would cause you to be, you realize where you're vulnerable.
Mr. Ellis, yes, I understand where you're coming from, but I am saying that in the open, right now the government is saying wear the mask on the, when you're in the buildings and that kind of stuff. And I very much agree with that position. Yes, when you're in the buildings, enclosed environment, crowded, yes, wear your mask. But I can't see the negative impact really on the outside and our atmosphere.
Quite,
so I am saying,
Mr. Frankly, that is up to you. Let me say it to you personally.
Before you cut me off, let me say one or two other things, Mr. Right, so it's our choice, right? I'm still on? Good.
Yeah,
so,
you are.
Right, so it's totally our choice. And your position is your position. So we should not be meant to try to bend to your position. All right?
I'm not asking you to bend to mine, but I'm saying to you
right.
that in the circumstances, common sense, to me, my common sense would suggest that I got to be more cautious than that.
So I am going. I'm returning to. So I am saying that okay, the gentleman called the Anthony Marcus gets a lot of lick because he says there's no corona in Barbados, which has been proven, okay. And he says to protect the borders. Now we let our guard down and corona gets in among us and has been posing some problems. But yet we're still trying to talk with this guy for trying to tell us that we didn't have any. But that we
I am
because I think he talks a lot of sense. So let me go on a little further, right? So I want to ask a question. We didn't go to lockdown when we saw that there were these high number of cases, unusually high number of cases. We didn't go to lockdown. I thought that we would go at least a 2-week lockdown. We didn't do it. So we extended out to the end of January, the curfew factor. I want to have an idea as to how long we're going to go on with curfew, because if we still got cases in the island, at what point do we say, hey, let me try to get this thing totally out of the island by contact tracing? Let me try, how long are we going to go on with this curfew, this big curfew? But it doesn't really, to me, make a lot of difference to what's happening with the presence of the corona here. So I want to know, what is the approach going forward? Are we going to remain curfewed, or are we going to shut down for a couple of weeks complete and try to get it out? Or are we going to try to say, can we live in this thing? Can we have to live with it? How can we live with it? How can we live in the presence of corona, especially the asymptomatic situation that we are experiencing? How can we live with it? This is the kind of question I want to ask. And I would like somebody to really answer me, and not just tell me that we got people with symptoms. I mean, asymptomatic, and we are very concerned. But is that asymptomatic situation? Is it spreading? Do people get sick? Do people get sick from it? Or how sick?
I think we've been around long enough to watch how you work with COVID, and everything is influenced by the numbers and the spread. If you have numbers that are rising, you reach that point where you have to make a decision about what are you going to do next.
Right.
You strengthen protocols, and if you get enough people, you have no choice but to lock down. Anybody else says. Once you get enough people, what we've noticed in locking down is that the timing is absolutely essential, because in the early stages of this pandemic, Italy locked down, and everybody thought that by locking down, Italy was going to stave off the increase in the disease. You know what happened? It rapidly spread after the lockdown. A lot of the people who were carrying the disease we're now locked down and spreading it among each other. So you got to be very sensitive to that particular timing.
Even Italy had a period of calm after lockdown, but I don't know, maybe a month, 2 months, a period of calm before the thing started to come back, resurge again. And for whatever reason, it started to resurge. We here in Barbados, we had 7-8 months, roughly, well, a good period of no signs of this thing, and it didn't pop up in Barbados, just so it was coming externally from the ships in particular. We hardly saw it from the plane travel, because of the low travel that was going on. But our situation was not similar to Italy or Spain or anybody else.
My only point is about lockdown and the timing of lockdown. I mentioned Italy only in that context.
And I think you, Mr. Ellis, is trying to not to try to make everybody feel comfortable with the way that you approach things. And I see that's the only way to go, you know.
Now, let me tell you something. I just got to be very frank with you. I have my own opinion on things, and I am entitled to my view. I am not here to ram my view down anybody else's throat. And my style to doing this program is not to do that. I always encourage people, unless you're talking what I perceive to be utter nonsense, and you're misleading people and that sort of thing, I encourage people to have their say. So don't give the people the impression that my style is to, you take it or leave it. You know, I give you my view, you give me yours. And that's how we are supposed to operate.
I would like it that way.
But you get an opportunity to have your say, even though it differs from mine from time to time, sharply at times. You still get a chance to speak.
I am not saying not, Mr. Ellis, but I'm not going to hold
you saying that. So what you're saying then? Have you recognized that? How you're introducing that kind of...
You want me to... Okay, I could prolong it if you want me to prolong, but I didn't really want to prolong on that aspect because that's not...
No, but I have to tell you where to get off with it, because basically you put up these bogeymen so that you can knock them down. Now you don't allow you to get away with that.
I don't agree with you totally there, but I don't want to, like I said, at this point...
What's your other point?
Quickly, I want to say, if you said you got some time, I want to say that relative to the taxi operators generally in Barbados, I'm concerned with taxi generally, but I'm homing in on Fairchurch Street right now, right? And I'm saying that it seems to me that, you know, there's a vision there to run, keep taxi drivers on the run, in an area that generally they could comfortably play the trade, and it's an active area, they're trying to stop these guys from making a living. And somebody seems to take pleasure, absolute pleasure, and causing these guys to disappear right all over the place. And it's not fair. And I'm saying they should look at, if this is going to continue like this, then they should look at who they vote for when the election comes, if this is going to be the case. This cannot be when people are trying to live in an honest manner. Fairchurch Street is a wide area. You can designate particular positions for the taxi, and yet they continue to be hung by the police. This is not right. And I am saying a number of other things are not right, but I'm zooming in on this one for now.
I think I know Fairchurch Street pretty well, and I must say to you that I can understand why there's a necessity to put some kind of measures in place there. You say it's wide, and that's true. But I find that there's quite a lot of activity that takes place there in the supermarket. And by the time the government gets around to opening up the new Fairchurch Street market, I anticipate that there will be parking facilities available out there. You remember that in the past, we had parking facilities around there. So I can't envision the government going to this.
Well, I haven't seen it in the plans, and I hope that they do. If they didn't, that they'll make some adjustments and put in some plans for the guys. But I am saying in the immediate situation that there's enough comfortable space for parking without congesting the area with the exit transport board buses from the stand. I am saying there's enough to put several parks on the left side and also on the right side, depending on what side you're coming from. To let these taxi guys play the trade in peace and make a living. They're not trying to kill anybody. They're not trying to rob anybody. They're just trying to live. That's all I'm asking this government at this time. Okay, Mr. Dennis?
Thank you. Down to brass tacks. So we are now inching our way towards the latest news at 12:30. And, you know, quite a lot has been happening with this COVID-19 situation across the world. People are grappling with it, and perhaps I should just spend a little bit of time giving you some updates here on what we are seeing in other parts of the world at the moment. You have in Britain, They're saying that this Brazil virus is already in the UK, but there is some suggestion. They say here a Brazilian variant has been discovered in the UK, but it is not the one currently causing concern. That is what a leading virologist has said. So this is to update some information which we gave you earlier. This particular virologist, they're saying that the health system in the Brazilian city of Manaus is said to be collapsing amid soaring infections linked to this new variant. A leading scientist says one of two coronavirus variants first detected in Brazil has been found in the UK, but not the variant that is causing them the greater concern. This is down to Brass Tacks. Do we have anyone on the line there? 4341790. Well, as we make our way towards the news, I suppose, Dennis Johnson, you have been with me now. This week we've been dominated by this whole question of the coronavirus. And for you, I suppose you can give your perspective on what you see as the main challenges that we encounter as producer and fellow moderator. He's going to somebody else. Hello. Down to Brass Tacks. You can come back to me on that. Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. I got a point, or I want you to reason with me. Let me put it that way. I don't think that there are any mandates in place for academic or vocational qualifications for people to run or hold political office in this country. At least not that I'm aware of. I don't know if you know otherwise. So it tells me that as long as you are a citizen of Barbados and of a good moral character, you can offer yourself for political office. It means also, if you are elected, you stand a chance of being selected to head a ministry or some official position. It is then the leader of the party, the person who commands the majority support, to choose from among those who have been elected and generally seek to place them as best as possible in ministries which they could help fulfill the party's vision for the country. Mr. Ellis, I do not believe that elected politicians and nominated government officials are necessarily people that have prerequisite skills or are born with abilities to fix every problem. Neither do I believe that they necessarily have the capability to find solutions to resolve problems in what we would call real time. The best that they can do is try, and I will give that to them. But when you build a political approach or a campaign based on the whole notion of your competence and know-how, and how you can readily resolve problems and settle long-standing issues, there is going to be a problem.
Wait,
to be sure,
let me ask you this: Isn't that what all politicians do?
Political parties
do that.
Yes, that is true. That is true. I am making a point, a case, and if you follow, let me finish. You would see where I am going with this.
Okay, let me hear.
I said if there is going to be a problem, and to be sure, there are going to be high expectations, and along with a serious dependency on your ability to fulfill those expectations or the expectations of the people in waiting. I am of the view that under such conditions, it is therefore then unrealistic to expect people to be calm and patient when their expectations have been heightened and enlarged. You see, that's how I am thinking. I don't know how you say it, but that's my view on that. It applies to any political party.
And well, first of all, I really believe that we need to be realistic as members of the public and as electors. And we, you know, the first order of business is to try your best not to be overwhelmed by propaganda and these unrealistic expectations. Because if we are unrealistic in our expectations, we then suffer immensely when it comes to disappointment.
I quite agree with that. So therefore, I think there's a certain level of accountability when we offer ourselves for political office in terms of what we say to the people. Because some of the masses are not going to be able...
That exists. There is accountability in this system.
But you see, there's accountability at various levels. We are talking about accountability at the level where you are seeking to be elected to political office to represent the interests of the people of the country. So therefore, people are not going to be thinking about it like you or I, or maybe some people who may be able to study this thing.
Let's not confuse this issue. Once you're dealing with elected officials, and they go to the polls, and the polls are free and fair, that is where the accountability exists at the highest level.
I do not think that that's only where the accountability exists. There are several layers of accountability. And I am saying to you, and this is my position on this, from the start, you have to be able to speak to the people in a manner in which they can understand and appreciate.
I really think you should tell you that there's something more specific. This is too airy fairy a discussion.
It can be airy fairy. It's very general. Accountability. You are defining accountability at your level.
I am saying to you, I would be more comfortable discussing this issue of accountability in the context of something that is happening now.
The discussion became one of accountability because you are trying to make a case that accountability only exists at the level of where there are checks and balances and where there's legislation and where there's laws. And I'm saying to you, it has to start before.
I didn't say so. I said that when you're dealing with politicians, the greatest accountability is at the polls. This is where people get the opportunity to endorse or to reject politicians.
I can't agree with that.
I accept your view that apart from that, there are other layers of accountability. Which means, for instance, that in government, you're accountable to the people, so you come back to the people periodically and you discuss what's going on. Accountability in the context of COVID. What I want you to tell me is whether you think we're getting it right now or not, then. I want something more specific than that. Good afternoon and welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Afternoon. I was listening to the Prime Minister yesterday evening, and she was saying she feels hurt that Barbadians don't understand where she's coming from about protecting our brand and things like that. But she doesn't understand how we feel when we say it's not necessary. Because in a pandemic, it'd be just like if it was a hurricane, if it was an earthquake, nobody holds you to brand. Nobody is expecting, if you said you get a test in 3 days and you have to wait longer than that, that they expect you to reimburse them. It's that kind of situation. So if we have money that we borrowed and we want to spend it however we see fit, I feel we could spend it to pay some of the hotel workers who got their time cut. They were working they're working less, but doing the job of so many other people. So I think that is where the money can go. I think that I'm glad that we are in a democratic society that we can call and say how we feel, and not in a communist country where we can feel strongly about something, but they are not open arms. So I am glad that we have this program that we could talk about it. Another thing, do we still have to refer to Liz Thompson as Ambassador Thompson if she's in Barbados now and not representing the country outside of Barbados?
Well, you have to understand what has happened here. She has been designated Ambassador Plenipotentiary, and that means that she is treated as an ambassador with all that goes with it. Yeah? So that is what that's about. The government should really explain to you what that really means.
Oh, well, I'm happy that you explained to me, because I had no idea. I thought you're ambassador if you're representing your country outside of your country. So thanks for explaining that. But and thanks for having this program, and have a good day.
Thank you very much. This person writes to us. They say, I am a nurse and very much in support of the action my colleagues have taken, and I am hoping all nurses will follow suit, including the ones at the QEH. They go on to say it is long overdue with all the injustices meted out to nurses in this country by government pertaining to the horrendous pay nurses receive. Just letting the public know, the chairman has made it seem as though all nurses at the QEH are receiving hazard pay. But this isn't true. I come into contact daily with patients coming from the community, which puts me at risk and will not receive a cent. This person says that in their judgment, all nurses need to strike. This is down to brass tacks. Welcome to the program. You are on the air. Hello. Yes,
can you
welcome.
Hear me?
I can now, yes.
Welcome. Yeah. If you have a hurricane coming into Barbados, we as Barbadians go in the supermarket, so we buy stuff to put down for the hurricane. We board up, we go to the necessary hardware stores, and we board up on the houses and stuff to prepare for a hurricane.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes, that's true. Okay. That's how we prepare for a hurricane.
Now, we knew that the cases was coming in from England all along. We heard it on all the networks all over the world. But we think that the best thing to do in Barbados was to close flights coming in from England. I mean, I don't understand why it's so hard, and then we got to criticize for some of the things that we're seeing that down here, because at the end of the day, if we as Barbadians decide as poor people to take the risk of closing flights from England, no matter how hard it would be for 2 weeks, is that so hard for the government of Barbados to do? And mind you, I'm a Barbadian party supporter, and that does not mean that I can't have constructive criticism. You understand? I don't understand why it's so hard for us to partner with the program and criticize my government if I think that they are doing something that is not appropriate. You understand?
I understand.
This down here on the ground, we got to go to work, we got to go all over. We, as Barbados, are living it. At the end of the day, if we don't get money, we can't survive. And if we are willing to take the sacrifice, what about the ones that are working for all the big money? We can't take a little sacrifice as well just to close down our country for 2 weeks to stop all this backlog and all this nonsense from going on. I mean, we are so, and we are talking about, we got to try and save the country from what? We, as people on the ground, are willing to stay in our homes as poor people just for 2 weeks. And if you do a survey in Barbados, you will see that the overwhelming people in Barbados are saying to close down at least the place coming out for the next 2 weeks. And that is my contribution this afternoon, Mr. Ellis. Thanks for listening.
But what are you hearing from people on the ground?
we, as people on the ground, we call it, I call it people that have to get up every day and do a 9-to-5. Every day and go on to work, I mean, for a salary that is not as much as the others. And we are willing down here to take the sacrifice and stay away from the girls coming in from at least from that country. We don't even know nothing about the vaccine that our government are talking about. That my government said that they take the vaccine. Now we're hearing on the TV last night that this congressman took the vaccine twice. He got a double vaccine and still come up with the COVID. And you know, we're hearing 200,000 people down here, and we're talking about vaccine and we don't even know if it's going to work. We are trying to safeguard ourselves. If the European flight stops from other big countries, as soon as we can't stop it. Mr. Ellis Bonnie Gorman, we talk later.
Okay, thank you very much.